St. Mark, the 12th chapter.
Glory to you, Lord.
As Jesus taught, he said, "Beware of the scribes, who like to walk around in long robes and to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces, and to have the best seats in the synagogues and places of honor at banquets. They devour widows' houses, and for the sake of appearance say long prayers. They will receive the greater condemnation." Jesus sat down opposite the treasury and watched the crowd putting money into the treasury. Many rich people put in large sums. A poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which are worth a penny. Then he called his disciples and said to them, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the treasury. For all of them have contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, all she had to live on." The Gospel of the Lord. Silencing his cell phone was the first thing this man did right before worship started every week. He would make sure that it was turned off so that it wouldn't ring during the service and disturb the service. Interesting, when I mentioned that to the earlier service, I saw a number of people reaching into their pockets and their pocketbooks, making sure their phones were really turned off because they didn't want to be the next sermon illustration. But even though he had thought he had turned off his phone, sure enough, during the sermon, the phone started to ring. And church people being church people, they did what you would expect. They turned and they glared at him. And after that, then, as he's leaving the church, the pastor felt the need to make mention of the fact that his phone had disrupted the sermon, and all of the way home, his wife continued to remind him that he had done something wrong during the service. I've been in that place. Later that evening, this man joined a couple of his friends at the local sports bar to watch a football game, probably the Steelers trouncing whatever team they're playing next. And during the middle of the game, when he got excited about a play, he ended up knocking over his drink. Immediately, his friends grabbed napkins and started mopping it up and said, "Don't worry about it. We'll help you clean it up." The waitress, who saw what had happened, came over with towels and dried up the drink from the floor. She said, "It happens all the time. We're used to it here." And the bartender, seeing what had happened, made him a new drink and said, "I'm not going to charge you just because it just happens that way. I'll give you one chance to answer the question, did he go back to church or did he go back to the sports bar?" He got the answer. In the Gospel of Mark, the writer in his brilliance creates a tension throughout the book. And it's the tension between God providing life and human beings engaging in behaviors out of fear that instead take life away from others and from themselves. And we have in the gospel text today an example of the kind of behaviors in which human beings can engage that can take away the life of others. we have in front of us the scribes, and we learn about the scribes quickly that they like to walk around in long robes. I'm always hesitant to lift that up as I'm standing in front of you dressed the way that I am on Sunday morning, and they love to have the positions of honor and the best seats in the house. Do you realize these red chairs up front are so much more comfortable than the pews in which you are sitting right now? They like to say these long prayers, but more than that, they're not engaged in the important acts of justice that support those in need, like widows. And so widows' homes are being torn away from them, and they don't have what they need to live. So what you have are people who are doing things that are harmful to others, but covering it up with what appear to be good, pious actions, like saying long and protracted prayers, not because they want to pray for others, but because they want to hear people to hear how well they can pray. When you read the Gospel of Mark, it's important then to note that as the writer of Mark is shaping the teachings of Jesus, the writer is addressing specific concerns in that person's church. And we can catch a glimpse in this text of the problems that were occurring in Mark's church. The people were engaging in behaviors that were harmful to others, but covering it with what looked like good religious action. It's important for us to note that because the same thing continues to play out in every faith community, and it continues to play out in our own personal lives. And I want you to grasp that because many times we aren't even aware of the moments when we do these kind of things to other people. One of my practices is because the key to my truck is this one of these honking big keys that you really can't carry around in your pocket because it's annoying, but you don't want to take it with you because you might lay it down and not have it with you. So I normally just leave my key in my truck and lock it in there because I have a keypad on the side of my door there. And so I can just punch the code in and open the door, and then my key is in the console, and then I can start the truck and I can take off. And it was at this past week that I went to a meeting, and I didn't want to take my keys in with me, so I put them inside the console and I locked the door, went into my meeting. As I'm walking back out, it dawned on me, I wasn't in my truck. I was in a loaner truck from the dealership. I didn't have the code to get back into the truck. The dealership had the code. It was in the owner's manual in the glove department of the truck. So I had to wait 40 minutes for Ford roadside service to show up, to reach in through and to get the door open. And I continued to thank the man for coming out in the middle of this ugly, rainy afternoon and doing what he needed to do to get in. And I thanked him one more time as he wrapped up, and he looked at me and he said, I need to thank you for being so patient with me and for thanking me for my work, because most people don't do that. They yell at me instead. They lock their keys in the car and they yell at me. How easy it is in those moments when we fall to find a way to take it out on others. And this legalism of what others are doing wrong, it's a legalism that leads to destroying other people so that we can feel better about ourselves. We're being cautioned to pay attention to how we too can fall into that trap. What is tempting to do in this text then is to say, okay, we have the story of the scribes and what they are doing, which is bringing destruction to others. And then we have the story of the widow, and so we should follow her example. But I want you to take a look at the story of the widow and see whether it's really her example that we're called to follow. The first thing we need to understand when we look at the story of the widow is that as she gives up her last two coins, she has nothing left. And the fact that she has nothing left upon which to live means that the system of her day has failed her. Because there was provision in the law, an act of justice, where it was required that society take care of widows. It comes from Deuteronomy 24, verse 17, which in part reads, "You shall not pervert the justice due an immigrant." I'll let that one sit for a moment. Teachings of Moses, and yet somehow we think that's not as applicable as other laws. "Pervert the justice to an immigrant or an orphan, nor take a widow's garment in pledge. But you shall remember that you were a slave and that the Lord your God redeemed you. Therefore, I'm commanding you to do this thing." The fact that the society was not taking care of this widow shows, number one, society had failed her. Number two, this widow takes the last two coins she has and she puts it into the temple treasury. And what do we notice? Her circumstances do not change. She does a good thing, but her life circumstances don't change. And finally, the money that she's putting in is money that is given for the support of the temple. And yet, what we know is within 20 to 25 years after Jesus encounters that woman, the temple will be torn down. She's giving all the money she has to a building that will be destroyed. Society has failed her. Her actions don't change her circumstances. And she's giving to something that will end up falling apart. I don't think that's an example we want to follow, because there is no hope in that. So perhaps the widow is not intended as an example. Perhaps instead of being an example, the widow is a witness. She's a witness to the life that Jesus will give her. She's a testimony to what God will do in human life. What we hear in this text is a call to someone whose life is in the hands of God. Because what we do many times will fall apart around us. The first house that my wife and I bought, it was a brand new construction, so there was like no yard and no landscaping at all. So it was our job to have someone put in the yard, and we had a landscape expert come in and told us all of these really amazing things we could do to landscape the house and how easy it would be to do all of this work. Well, yeah, landscapers can say that because they have like tractors and skid loaders and all the right tools to do the job. And so he maps this stuff out, and we were young and ignorant back then, old and ignorant now, but young and ignorant back then, and we thought, we can handle this. And one of the plans was to put in a brick patio. And it wasn't just a square brick patio, but it was one of those with curves to it. It was a really great design, but it took a lot of work. It is really amazing that our marriage survived the process of getting that built, because there were a lot of fights that are involved in getting it done. But we got it done, and we loved the way it looked on the back of the house. This past summer when I was out in Ohio, I just happened to drive by that house of ours. And as I looked in the back of the house, wanting to see that wonderful work, they had torn the patio up and put in a wood deck. Oh my gosh. After all of that work, it was gone. The life of the widow is not an example, but a witness to what God is doing. Bookending this gospel reading, prior to it, it's Jesus teaching that the Messiah is greater than King David, and that he's the Messiah. Afterward, we have Jesus saying that the Messiah must be arrested and crucified and die. We have a new definition of what God's chosen one is doing. And what God's chosen one is doing, going to the places in human life where the despair and the brokenness is the deepest. Jesus, the night before his crucifixion, cries out that he is afraid of what he is facing. Yet even though he is afraid of what he is facing, he insists that God's will be done in that moment. And what God's will is done through the cross of Jesus. And look what happens in that moment. Those legalistic people who were looking for Jesus' downfall, they found that moment when Jesus is hanging on the cross and he can no longer challenge them in their way of life. They taunt him. Let that be a word of caution for what a position of power will give you. That when you finally fall, people will celebrate that moment that you fall. And they say, save yourself, knowing that he can't do it. Gathered around that cross are those who had heard how Jesus had healed the sick and worked with those whose lives are broken and had healed them and had yearned for that moment when they would encounter Jesus and the same thing would happen to them. And now the man is dying before he got to offer them the gift that they had yearned for. What is the use in hoping for someone who is going to die and can't offer that gift anymore? In that deepest, darkest, most broken moment that we find the one chosen by God. And out of that moment, God brings new life. Out of that deepest, darkest, most despairing moment, God brings new life. That's what the widow's life testifies to. A God who takes everything we have, even when it falls apart around us, and gives us new life. Robert Capon once wrote, "Grace doesn't sell easily. In fact, you can hardly give grace away because it works only for losers. No one wants to stand in that line. The world of winners, they won't buy forgiveness because that threatens to let the riffraff into the supper of the Lamb." There is no position of honor in the kingdom of God other than that God is bringing new life out of death for each one of you. I believe that that redefines what the church is. Those of us who've been raised in the church and have such a traditional perspective of church, it's connected to a building and a way of doing things, and we somehow think that if others can encounter the way we've encountered church in the same way, that it will help them in their lives. But I want to put before you a different vision of what the church can be. The church can be that place and moment where people, when everything else has fallen apart around them, can come and find the promise of new life. That in their encounter with God, they encounter new life. And in encountering God in that community, they also encounter one another as those who are part of the church witness to each other and share the story of this God gives new life out of brokenness and death. It would seem to me if the church becomes that, then people will choose to go back to church instead of going back to the sports bar. And